between the parties. We are at a difficult and complicated stage, but based on the leaders' stances, we seek to ensure the interests of the people, and I think that the talks are on the right track, Hatibzadeh said. The spokesperson added that the negotiations in Vienna would go smoother if Washington abandoned Trump's failed legacy and just agreed to fulfill its commitments under the JCPOA. And that would be it for the news segment. Back to our narrative. Regarding what matters, China and Russia, Iran's fellow Eastern parties to the deal, have spoken in favor of Iran's stance. That is for an uncomplicated revival of the deal by simply following JCPOA terms to the letter. Wang Kun, the Chinese envoy to the United Nations and other international organizations in Vienna, said, "Complete lifting of all relevant sanctions, including those on Iran and third parties, is the key to the success of the current negotiations to revive the 2015 Iran nuclear deal."
The United States has been adding to the list of countries under sanctions: China, Russia, Venezuela, and others. China and Russia also voted against Iran in the resolutions passed by the UN Security Council, but they are now under sanctions themselves. The more of these sanctioned countries are there, the more they cooperate, to the dismay of the United States. US sanctions have made many countries try to get rid of the dollar, a move which is very dangerous for the United States. The share of the dollar in the foreign exchange reserves of countries has fallen sharply and will fall even lower.
Mr. Kanani Moghaddam is not impressed by words paired with inaction.
We cannot accept America's promises. Other signatories must guarantee it. What's their purpose in their talks after all, other than monitoring and guaranteeing the agreement? Russia and China seem to be sitting aside while the Europeans and Americans are cooperating. We're left alone. It shouldn't be like that. We mustn't be forced to agree to anything the Americans say.
On the other hand, Russia's representative to international organizations in Vienna, Mikhail Ulyanov, tweeted that there is no realistic alternative to the JCPOA. He wrote, "Why do almost all countries support restoration of the JCPOA? Because it is a key element of the international non-proliferation architecture. The deal, if restored, can provide credible assurances of peaceful character of the Iranian nuclear program via intrusive IAEA verification."
Both Iran and the United States wanted the talks to begin because the Iranian side had suffered billions of dollars in losses of the Iranian people's money because of the continuing oppressive sanctions imposed on it. It seems that there was no solution other than negotiations to solve this problem. At the same time, they claimed their consent about Iran's nuclear advancements. That's why I believe both sides needed the negotiations to take place.
As each side to the deal has come with fixations of its own, each seems to assess the outcome quite differently from the next. The critical question Iran faces is not, is the U.S. serious about re-entering the deal? Rather, it is, what would be the U.S.'s intention for re-entering?
If the U.S. really wants to return to the JCPOA, why would that be?
The ultimate goal of the United States is to overthrow the Islamic Republic, disintegrate Iran, and seize its oil resources. That's because the U.S. is concerned about losing its position as the single superpower. The world is becoming multipolar. China, India, Japan, Russia, and others are getting stronger, and the Islamic world is uniting.
While talks may have appeared to have progressed, a senior U.S. State Department official implied a day later that talks were likely to require several rounds, saying, "There still are disagreements, and in some cases, pretty important ones. We are not near the conclusion of these negotiations. The outcome is still uncertain. We have made some progress."
Thing is, Iran has said it will no longer linger and accept unwritten promises. All parties are seeking guarantees the U.S. won't just pull out of the JCPOA again at will. But the U.S. sees no feasibility in a guarantee that the next administration might pull out of. But then, what of guarantees the present U.S. administration will act reliably? This is necessary, given even the Obama administration imposed sanctions after the 2015 JCPOA signing, and also given present Republicans in Congress, U.S. Congress, have recently, days ago, unveiled on Wednesday, the 21st of April, the largest ever package of Iran sanctions ever in history, as they put it. The bill, which has been dubbed the Maximum Pressure Act, would formally codify the Trump administration's tough sanctions campaign on Iran and would force the Biden administration to submit any revamped nuclear deal with Iran to Congress for review before it is approved. However, Iran will not accept a revamped deal.
The President of the United States has a lot of power. He could suspend congressional resolutions. That is, he does not have the power to repeal congressional resolutions, so he can't cancel the Congress's laws against Iran, even if he wants to, which he doesn't. But it can use its power to suspend Iran's sanctions, as the Obama administration did, which was repeated on three occasions during the Trump administration.
The Wall Street Journal cited two people familiar with the matter as saying Washington was open to easing terrorism sanctions against Iran's central bank, its national oil and tanker companies and key sectors, including steel and aluminium.
I'm sure Biden will not lift the sanctions. If it wants to lift even the sanctions imposed by the JCPOA, it must return more than $100 billion to Iran. It will not do so. For this reason, I believe that the strategy of our foreign ministry is based on a kind of undue trust in the United States. America is not trustworthy at all. It wasn't under Obama and Trump, neither is it under Biden.
Analysts have said it is inevitable the United States would have to ease some of its terrorism-related sanctions if there is to be a revival of the deal, because without this, Iran would be unable to resume exporting oil. The newspaper cited one senior European official as saying that Washington has also signaled potential sanctions relief for sectors including textiles, autos, shipping and insurance. They don't all matter equally to Iran, however.
If our central bank is under sanctions, it can never finance nor trade, take its revenue from selling oil, or engage in domestic and international trade. It will be an absolute boycott. The central bank may be under several sanctions, JCPOA-related, American, European, human rights-related ones, and those under 20 to 31. If the U.S. lifts one, the other three remain in place. So we need to write out our demands and establish a framework, pass it through relevant authorities, and then submit that to the U.S. as a draft proposal.
Without lifting key sanctions that have hampered Iran's economic activities, any agreement would be indeed meaningless. JCPOA 2 and 3 are out of the question for Iran, but even the present JCPOA, the one and only, would mean nothing if, say, visa and ISA sanctions were not lifted. The anti-Iran sanctions imposed by former U.S. President Barack Obama's administration under the so-called Iran Sanctions Act, ISA, and the visa program will have to be terminated. So it's not just Trump-era sanctions the United States will have to fully remove, as Iran will not agree to a temporary lifting of the sanctions or their waiver.
It is expected that some of the important sanctions for Iran, namely those related to Tehran's oil sales, the central bank, and bans on Iran's sale of petrochemical material, will be either lifted or suspended in a very optimistic scenario, just as it was before May 2018.
There's been no direct or indirect talks between Iran and the U.S. It's other parties to the deal separately informing each of the two on one another's stance in Vienna. But so far, what we've got from a U.S. official is this statement. There are many other forms of sequencing that one could discuss, and we are open to that. But we are not going to accept a process in which the U.S. acts first and removes all the sanctions that it is committed to removing before Iran does anything. And although Russia's lead negotiator Ulyanov said on Monday, 19th of April, that a joint text is being drafted as representatives have moved from general words to agreeing on specific steps towards restoring the JCPOA, Iran doesn't appear inclined to budge from demanding all or nothing. All sanctions are to be scrapped in one stroke, and then Iran starts recommitting to the deal. And that'll be all for today, but the best is yet to come as parties get closer to whatever the outcome of the talks. So do return to the box at the same times next week and each week after. Till then, bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. In this blessed month, in addition to abstention from eating and drinking, we can strengthen our inclination for worship through refraining from sins, especially the sins of tongue. Just as gluttony and talkativeness may damage our personality, eating less and taciturnity set the ground for reaching spiritual sublimity. On the 17th night of the blessed month of Ramadan, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, ascended to the heavens. During the ascension or Mi'raj, he asked God, "My Lord, what is the beginning and end of worship?" God answered, "Fasting and silence. O Ahmad, no worship is endeared before me more than silence and fasting. Thus, if a person fasts but is not careful about his tongue, it's like a person who stands for prayer while he does not recite." Of course, this account of the Prophet's life does not mean that human beings should always keep silent. For sure, one should speak for taking his right or defending his right or that of others. Silence means avoiding excessive and unnecessary talk. Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Speech and silence are the cause of people's destruction and salvation. So good for the one who is able to recognize good word from evil and is aware of the benefits and pleasant effects of taciturnity and silence. Because silence is the temperament of the divine messengers and the motto of God's chosen servants. If a person knows the value of speech, he will not talk in vain and will stick to silence. The one who is aware of the nuances of silence and makes silence as the trust of his secrets, both his speech and silence will be worship, and nobody is aware of the reality of this worship except God." In this part of the program, we will continue talking about atonement in fasting. Atonement for the nullified fast of Ramadan can be done in one of these three ways: liberation of a slave, fasting for 2 months, that is 60 days, and feeding 60 poor people. For sure, nowadays there is no slave to liberate, therefore there are only two ways for atonement of the nullified fasting. If a person wants to fast 60 days for atonement, he should fast 31 days consecutively. Then he can fast the remaining 29 days either consecutively or separately. As for women who naturally cannot fast for a few days of the month, they should fast the days after the end of their period. Feeding 60 poor people can be done in two ways. They can either be fed with prepared food, or each of them is given 750 grams of wheat, rice, and a lake. Dear friends, as we said in the previous episode, the exact time of the night of Qadr is not clear. But according to the narrations, it is among the 19th, 21st, and 23rd nights. Some ulema also maintain that it can be the 27th night, which is mainly the belief of the Sunni brothers. The 19th night was the night that in the year 48, Imam Ali, peace upon him, was struck the fatal blow on his head by the renegade Abdurrahman ibn Muljam. And the 21st night coincides with the martyrdom of this Imam. Shia Muslims keep vigil all the three nights and spend the nights in prayer, recitation of the Noble Quran, and supplication to God. They also hold mourning ceremonies for the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, "There is a night in this month which is better than 1,000 months. Anyone who is deprived of the blessing of the night of Qadr has been deprived of all bounties. No one becomes deprived except the one who has deprived himself." The three nights of Qadr have two kinds of religious rites. First are the common rites that are performed in all three nights, but the second rare are the ones that are specific for each of these nights. In this episode, let us speak about the common rites. One of the rites on these nights is ghusl, that is the ritual washing of body, which is done near the time of dusk so that one performs his maghrib prayer after it. Some supplications are commonly read on all three nights. One of them is Joshan Kabir supplication. According to a hadith, God calls on the night of Qadr that he will forgive anyone who performs pilgrimage to Imam Hussein's shrine on this night. Another rite which is done by Shias is to take refuge in the Quran and the 14 infallible persons, that is the Prophet, his daughter Fatima, and the 12 Imams, blessings of God upon them. We open the Noble Quran in front of us and place God on oath by it, and then we keep it on our head and place God on oath by the 14 infallible persons to forgive our sins and plead to him to fulfill our needs. While keeping the Quran on our head, we repeat the names of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt 10 times. On these nights, it is highly recommended to think of and remember much the Redeemer of mankind, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance.
Debate.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. The third round of negotiations on reviving the Iran nuclear deal is underway in Vienna. Now, to that end, Tehran has come up with more detailed conditions, including guarantees to benefit from the deal this time, and for the trigger mechanism not to be activated in case of sanctions reimposition for whatever reason. Now, Tehran is setting the conditions to ascertain its economic benefits under the JCPOA, to which it has adhered without benefiting much. Now, we'll have a report on details of Tehran's demands in the Vienna talks, and then we'll put that issue up for debate with our panelists. Stay tuned.
Iran and the remaining signatories of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action are holding a new round of talks in Vienna in an effort to save the nuclear agreement nearly 3 years after Washington's unilateral withdrawal in 2018. As talks continue over a spat of issues, the Islamic Republic has reiterated its demands for returning back to compliance with the JCPOA. That's according to two sources who informed Press TV of the conditions.
Iran's demands regarding JCPOA talks. The United States must remove sanctions that prevent Iran from benefiting from the JCPOA. Legal institutions will accept the outcome of the Vienna talks only once all U.S. sanctions are removed and the removal is verified by Tehran. The United States has to guarantee that it won't use the snapback mechanism after rejoining the deal. The United States has to pay for the losses it inflicted on Iran by withdrawing from the JCPOA.
According to the sources, the United States has to guarantee that foreign companies cooperate with the Islamic Republic following Washington's rejoining of the agreement. Press TV analysts say CATSA and Iran Sanctions Act, visa bans, the dollar U-turn, and Section 311 of the Patriot Act are fundamental obstacles to Iran's gains under the JCPOA. Press TV analysts say among such obstacles are also a number of U.S. President's executive orders that prohibit transactions with respect to Iran and block property of Iranian individuals, governments, and financial institutions. They also say failing to remove sanctions, a 120-day or 180-day sanction waivers also deprive Iran of benefits stipulated under the JCPOA. Observers believe Tehran has reasons to persist with its demands.
Iran has experienced so much deceitful measures under the nuclear deal by the United States, and the U.S. deceitful measures have inflicted harms over the deal, so Iran is trying to block any such move in future.
The JCPOA revival talks come as Iranian officials have time and again warned that Tehran will not allow the negotiations to become attritional. Iran's top negotiator in Vienna and Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says the Islamic Republic would stop the negotiations if it detects that the other side lacks seriousness, tries to buy time, or seek to add new topics to those under discussion. Iran insists that the 2015 nuclear agreement can only be salvaged if its demands are met and that its conditions are the country's definitive policy. Former U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned the Iran nuclear deal in May 2018. Tehran, however, waited for a year, gave leeway to the European signatories to make up for the U.S. pullout, but the so-called E3 failed to abide by their commitments. Now, with the new U.S. administration in office for nearly 100 days, Washington has so far failed to take any solid measure to return to the deal. All in all, Iran says the ball is in the U.S.'s court to return to the agreement and remove all the sanctions on Tehran, or pursue the failed policy of predecessor, known as maximum pressure campaign, and push ahead with its hostile policy against the Islamic Republic.
Okay, that was Mehdi Valmer, reporter in there. Let me invite my guests. We have analyst and political commentator Mohan Abedin in our studios tonight with us, and also Iranian affairs expert Karim Sharara, who's joining us out of Beirut, the Lebanese capital. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. In our studio first, Mohan, I want to ask you about Iran. Iran keeping reminding the interlocutors in the Vienna talks that this deal will survive only if all the sanctions are removed and that, you know, at a go. Why is Iran insisting on this and keeping reminding the U.S. especially about this?
Well, this is the fundamental Iranian position. I mean, this is the bottom line from Iran's point of view, and it reflects Iran's experience with the JCPOA over the past 6 years. Even during the Obama administration, when the nuclear deal was first agreed, very few sanctions were actually lifted, and the Obama administration kept dragging its heels. And Iran, let's not forget, only agreed to restrict its civilian nuclear program for complete sanctions relief. That was the original deal. And even Obama reneged on that. And we all know what happened when Trump came to power. A unilateral U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA in May 2018. So this Iranian position reflects a very bitter experience. Mm. And the Americans have actually withdrawn from this deal unilaterally. First of all, by principle, it makes sense that they should actually revoke all the sanctions, all the JCPOA-related sanctions, mm-hmm. the nuclear sanctions, and all the Trump-era sanctions before Iran actually decides to come back.
You mean they're the ones to take the first action first? Because they were the first ones to leave.
This, I think everybody would agree, even some people in the American administration, it makes total sense for the Americans to make the first step as a confidence-building gesture. But also, again, let's not forget Iran's bitter experience with the JCPOA, and that's what actually determines Iran's position and Iran's demand that all sanctions, they not only have to be lifted, they have to be verifiably lifted.
Right. Okay, now let me turn to Beirut. We have Karim Shahra there. Karim, it seems that the United States is complicating the revival of the deal because it's refusing to lift all the Trump-era sanctions on Iran. That's what Tehran is asking. Why is that?
Back to the very beginning of the talks, I mean, you can see that from the get-go, the United States was intent on lowballing the Iranian side. They would not commit to anything. They were not going to commit to a verification of this of sanctions relief. They weren't going to commit to long term to anything beyond their current administration with regards to the deal itself. So I think they were just biding for time. And I think if we go back to Ayatollah Khamenei's speech before the talks, you can clearly see that he was very observant with regards to the Americans' intents, because he told the Iranian team that they should be wary of the talks dragging on, and I think that's what the U.S. was counting on. I mean, there were two versions of this talk before the talks started, anyway. The first version was that the United States wanted a speedy resolution and a speedy reconciliation with Iran so that they can influence domestic politics in Iran, bringing back a more moderate president. But then Ayatollah Khamenei said about the talks dragging on, then you had another version, which was that the United States wasn't intent on a speedy resolution to all of this, but really wanted the talks to drag on so that they can keep lowballing Iran and reach a more something that would be more suitable to them without giving any reasonable concessions to the Iranians. So now that the Iranian team has gone back to the talks with a renewed spirit, if I might say, not only asking for sanctions relief and not only asking for the United States to go back to the JCPOA as it was, not only asking for guarantees, no, they're now asking for compensation as well, which is what they should have done in the first place, actually, because if you see that the United States is going to lowball you, well, you're going to have to raise the stakes if you want to reach a suitable.
Sure. I'll come to that point also, Marisha. Now, let me ask Mahan. Mahan, you know that Iran had been in full compliance with the nuclear deal as it was endorsed by IAEA multiple times, 14, 15 times. Mm-hmm. And yet, the country did not enjoy much from the, I mean, economically, from the deal. So that is why that this time around, in order to stop this from recurring, Iran is asking for guarantees so that if anything should go wrong, Iran knows at least that it can continue with its business even for a certain period of time. So let's have your comment.
Well, absolutely. Well, one of the key Iranian demands is that at least for the next 4 years, sanctions have to be lifted. Not only that, but the foreign companies that are operating here as part of the post-JCPOA settlement, they should be able to operate here without fear of sanctions or anything related to that for at least 4 years. Mm-hmm. There's, of course, the demand for compensation, which our colleague in Beirut just set out. But also another key Iranian demand is that the so-called snapback power, which other signatories have, this should be revoked. Because of obviously the Trump administration tried to do that. They initially withdrew unilaterally, but then last September, in a very odd move, they tried to snap back sanctions, and that really backfired totally against them. But nevertheless, again, in principle, this snapback option is inimical to the whole spirit of the deal, and this should be revoked. But look, the most important thing here is that sanctions have to be verifiably lifted. I mean, the only reason Iran has agreed initially 6 years ago to cut back on its civilian nuclear program was that its economy would not be under any pressure. There would be no sanctions. We could trade and engage with the world at a financial, economic level without any kind of coercion, without any kind of hindrance. This should come into fruition immediately. So there has to be verification of the sanctions lifting process. And look, Iran is in a position where it has plenty of leverage. This is where I slightly disagree with our colleague in Beirut. The United States is in no position to influence domestic politics here. I don't think that's part of their game plan here. What the Americans are trying to do, basically, is trying to offer Iran a kind of a watered-down deal, putting Iran in a difficult position, again, without guarantees. So we agree to yet another nuclear deal, and in a couple of years, we again start experiencing difficulties. Another scenario is that the Americans are going for something like JCPOA plus, something that was also discussed during the Trump administration, you know, add more conditions to the JCPOA, for instance, bring in elements of Iran's national defense power or issues very sensitive to Iran's national security. This is an absolute no-no. The Iranian leadership from the top down has made it quite clear that JCPOA is a nuclear-specific agreement, and it stays at that level.
So any kind of
discussion about Iran's national defense power is an absolute taboo. It's not going anywhere.
Exactly. Let's get it over with this and implement it. Then we can talk about other things, if possible. Now, Kerim, the Islamic Republic did not benefit much from the nuclear deal once it signed it. And since former President Trump took the U.S. out of the JCPOA and thus prevented foreign companies and banks from trade and transaction with Iran, Iran even started losing instead of gaining anything from the deal. So naturally, this is what you're alluding to. Tehran should be compensated for all those losses, maybe a couple of trillion dollars, if I remember right, shouldn't it?
Well, if you take into account that the American administration's comportment towards Iran, I mean, this wasn't defensive in any way, and this wasn't just a case of trying to contain Iran. This was done with malice. Maximum pressure is about causing maximum harm to Iran and the Iranian people. I mean, for example, if you go to the U.S. Treasury, you will see that they really specify that these sanctions aren't meant to harm the Iranian people. As they claim. But if you put these into practice, I mean, most of the food companies and most, if not all, pharmaceutical companies during the Trump administration tried to stay away from Iran as much as they could, even though they could have dealt with Iran. But they were really afraid that the United States would have gone after them under any kind of pretext because they dealt with Iran. So although the United States comportment was that of leaving a humanitarian space for dealings with Iran, this wasn't implemented on the ground. This was done with malice. They wanted to harm the Iranian people. So this was done with criminal intent. Should the Iranian side be compensated? Yes, of course they should be compensated. But is this going to happen? I don't think that the United States would agree to such a measure. It's like you said. I mean, just being back in the deal and having it implemented as it should have been implemented is more than sufficient. If you take into consideration, for example, the fact that the wording of the deal was in such a way that the sanctions would be suspended and not lifted or removed. Well, that's one thing that should have been taken into account. Another thing that should have been taken into account is the fact that, well, yes, the nuclear sanctions were lifted, but these sanctions could have been brought back upon Iran under any kind of other pretext. Call it ballistic missiles sanctions. Call it anything else. Whatever. Call it, say, sponsoring terrorism, if you will.
Right.
They This is what the Iranian side is trying to debate now, that is trying to negotiate against. If you want to bring back, if you cannot bring back the sanctions any under a different pretext, be it nuclear or be it anything else.
That's true. But that's why Mohan is also saying that verifiable means practically removing all these.
Yeah, our colleague in Beirut actually raised a very important point, is that, look, even during the Obama administration, a lot of these sanctions were so-called suspended or waived. This is not good enough. They have to be lifted. They have to be abolished.
For Iran to be able to benefit.
Absolutely, yes. And so there has to be clarity on that. And there has to be verification. And from my understanding, from reading the appropriate literature and listening to the appropriate people, that will take at least a few months. Nobody should be in a hurry here to reach an agreement.
Because it's all the sectors.
Yeah, so to reach an agreement within a few weeks or a couple of months. No, no one's in a hurry. Iran actually, again, our colleague is right. The Trump administration imposed this so-called maximum pressure campaign with a lot of malice. It was with criminal intent. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But the other side is, it didn't work. The Iranian economy proved to be far more resilient than most people gave it credit for. So we've survived this for 3 years. Mm-hmm. We can survive it for sure for another 3 years. Nobody's in a hurry to come to a faulty agreement. So if we're going to reestablish the JCPOA, to reseal the deal, so-called, you know, it should be done properly on sound foundations. And at minimum, again, our colleague raised the issue of compensation. That's a key Iranian demand. But I think, first of all, at minimum, these sanctions have to be verifiably lifted. Another issue is that Iran has rejected, not necessarily the so-called step-by-step issue. If the Americans want to do it incrementally, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But they shouldn't expect Iran to go for a step-for-step process. They do something, Iran does something. Iran has rejected that. But if the Americans want to take their time and lift this slowly, that's fine. But Iran will only go back into compliance once all the JCPOA-related sanctions have been verified.
That's right, and Iran has made it pretty clear.
So the nuances here are very important. So it's very important to have a full grasp of the details here, because we all want an agreement, but it has to be on proper foundations for it to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let me ask Karim. Karim, you know that so far all the sides in Vienna are speaking of progress being made, and while at the same time admitting that major issues do remain. And the U.S. delegation is also there in attendance, and that's despite Tehran rejecting direct talks with it. Now, what would you expect to come out of the Vienna talks?
I think it's very optimistic to say that progress is being made. I mean,
that's what negotiators have been saying.
Yes. The talks have been shrouded in a lot of secrecy, but they've been saying that ever since the beginning. I mean, President Rouhani has said it, the 50 to 70% of the hurdles have been overcome. But then you go to the American side, and they barely say that 30% of it is done, or 30% of the hurdles, that is. So progress is being made. Well, okay, if you want progress to be made, then it should be upon the major step. They should be able to agree on the basics at the very least. I mean, I'm really not optimistic about the future of all this, especially since I mean, if you take into consideration the comportment of the Biden administration ever since they came to power. Well, you have China, you have Russia, and you have Iran. They're triple threat. So what they've been able to accomplish so far is antagonize China, not only antagonize Russia, but bring a lot of European countries close to war with Russia. And now you have Iran, and they're not. I don't think they're going to risk a deal with Iran at such a particular point of time when they need to amass, when they need to bring their allies in the Middle East close together. Not unless. Look, you have two fronts that the Americans have to deal with. Opening up a third front is foolish, but if anything, the Americans are going to work on destabilizing Iran domestically. I mean, that's proven to be their track record so far.
Okay.
The way I think things would be going if they see the deal as a way to undermine Iran's progress on the economic level. Look, okay. If you look at Iran's track record, I'm sorry,
I get one more question, if we have time, I'll go back to you. And Mohan, we have heard that the White House is saying that the U.S. and Israel have agreed to set up this, what they call, working group to discuss Iran's drone and missile program. And have you heard of that, and what would that group do?
If they want to do that, that's fine. But that's independent of the JCPOA. That's their problem. If they want to, Iran is well within its rights to develop its national defense capability, mm-hmm. and Iran is never ever going to accept any restrictions on any of that. If they want to have their own working group to track Iran's progress, that's fine, that's their problem. Mm-hmm. But none of these can be brought into the JCPOA discussions. This is an absolute red line.
Okay.
And as far as I know, they haven't been raised, and hopefully they will not be raised. Just one issue about the progress. I think this is not really time sensitive. Nobody should be in a hurry. As I said, Iran actually withstood Trump's so-called maximum pressure campaign for 3 years. Mm-hmm. The Iranian economy proved resilient. Yes, the Americans wanted to destabilize this country, but they didn't succeed,
okay.
and they cannot succeed.
If you allow me, I'll give Karim 30 seconds. Karim, go ahead, 30 seconds.
Okay, basically, I just wanted to say that what you now have is Israeli-Saudi rapprochement. And I think that's a really a priority for the Americans, because they need to bring their allies closer together. What with Iran scoring so many victories in the region over the past few years, so if they need to face Iran at the regional level, that's what the Americans are going to be working on.
Okay.
They cannot give Iran a favorable deal if it's going to empower it in the region. If anything, they're going to try to undermine Iran through the deal, and that's what I think that what they were shooting for when they wanted to go back to the JCPOA, because Iran has shown its commitment to the JCPOA, to its diplomatic relations. But
okay.
when they try to undermine it through any other means...
Okay, you got to jump in. We're out of time. I'm sorry for interrupting. We're just out of time. Let me thank our guests. We had analyst and political commentator Mohan Abed in our Tehran studio, and also Iranian affairs expert Karim Sharara, who joined us from Beirut.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, which was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left you last week, and here is Ayah 21 of Surah Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny.
فإذا عزم الأمر فلو صدقوا الله لكان خيرا لهم.
Obedience and upright speech are all that is expected of you. So when the matter has been resolved upon, if they remain true to Allah, that will surely be better for them. If you might recall, in our last Friday's explanation of the preceding ayah of this surah, we had said that while true believers stand steadfast and fearlessly defend their faith, even if it means martyrdom in case of jihad or striving in the way of Allah, those who pay lip service to Islam are scared to death in such a situation and run away under different pretexts. This is surely a sign of hypocrisy. The ayah that we recited to you now means to say that true faith requires obeying God and His Prophet and refraining from undue pretexts, because such moves might undermine the morale of others and prevent them from participating in the fight against the enemies. In other words, it would be better to speak and act wholeheartedly when the declaration for defense or jihad is decisive, since this will lead to your honor in this world and great reward and salvation in the hereafter. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, faith requires righteous speech and acting in accordance with God's commandments rather than what we desire. Number two, jihad against the enemies who are bent upon mischief is among the divine commandments, and a true believer never props up any pretext to evade active duty. And number three, obedience to God and the Prophet's instructions is to our benefit, both in the transient life of the mortal world and in the hereafter. Now let us listen to ayahs 22 and 23 of this surah.
فَهَلْ عَسَيْتُمْ إِن تَوَلَّيْتُمْ أَن تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَتُقَطِّعُوا أَرْحَامَكُمْ أُولَئِكَ الَّذِينَ لَعَنَهُمُ اللَّهُ فَأَصَمَّهُمْ وَأَعْمَى أَبْصَارَهُمْ.
May it not be that if you were to wield authority, you would cause corruption in the land and ill-treat your blood relations? They are the ones whom Allah has cursed, so He made them deaf and blinded their sight. If those who violate Quranic injunctions, that is, the disbelievers and the hypocrites, take control of affairs and assume authority, then they would prepare the ground for corruption and mischief, including the ill-treatment of kith and kin. For this reason, it is incumbent upon the believers to take part in jihad in order to prevent the enemies from carrying out their sordid plans. The address here is to the frail of faith, and means to say that by escaping jihad, such people should not think they have saved themselves, because their deserting paves the way for corruption and slaughter, with deadly consequences affecting all. In other words, the hypocrites are reprimanded for their opportunistic attitude so that they refrain from doing mischief and severing ties of kinship, as they used to do during the pre-Islamic times of ignorance. The next ayah means to say that such people, that is the hypocrites, who spread corruption and sever the ties of kinship, incur divine damnation, as a consequence of which God has made them deaf to the words of guidance and blind to the signs of truth and realities that are all around. From these ayahs we'll learn that, number one, those evading jihad do not really save themselves, but are the cause of corruption, mischief, and bloodshed, which affect them as well. Number two, violation of divine teachings weakens family bonds and results in fratricide. Number three, God Almighty has damned those who cause corruption and undermine blood relationships. And number four, eyes and ears are useful only if properly used, since there are many people who, despite possessing healthy faculties of listening and sight, are unable to heed the words of guidance or understand the truth. Thank you. Now let us listen to Ayah 24 in conclusion of this week's episode.
أَفَلَا يَتَدَبَّرُونَ الْقُرْآنَ أَمْ عَلَى قُلُوبٍ أَقْفَالُهَا.
Do they not contemplate upon the guidelines of the Quran, or are there locks on their hearts? This ayah is a warning to the people of weak faith who do not ponder on the timeless wisdom of the noble Quran in order to benefit from its guidelines, since the heavenly scripture is not solely for recitation but is a book of thought and meditation. The unfortunate state of such people lies either in their carelessness toward this supreme symbol of divine guidance or in their lack of perception owing to the insensitivity of their hearts, which are occupied by vain desires and the vicious acts they had committed. In other words, the one who loses way in darkness is either blind or does not carry a light, which means hypocrites are sick at heart and fail to benefit from the Noble Quran. All believers must contemplate on the wordings of the Noble Quran as God has said in Ayah 29 of Surah Sa'd, which said, "A blessed book that we have sent down to you so that they may contemplate its signs." That's why, on the Day of Judgment, the Prophet will complain to God of how the Muslims had left the Noble Quran alone, and this loneliness of the Noble Quran is in two ways. Some of us Muslims recite it a little, while those who recite it do it in a parrot-like manner without pondering on its concepts or practically following its guidelines in daily life. Thus, those fail to benefit from the unlimited bounties and timeless wisdom of the Noble Quran in accordance with the guidelines of the Prophet and his infallible successors actually lock their hearts from truth because of either ignorance or prejudice. This is the reason for the myriads of problems prevailing in the society and the lack of Islamic unity. This ayah teaches us that, number one, the Noble Quran is not merely for ritual recitation, but it should be properly read, reflected upon, and put into practice. Number two, all Muslims are duty-bound to contemplate on the timeless wisdom of the Noble Quran. And number three, the failure to contemplate on the Quran results in locking up the hearts towards the truth, and the result will be blindness of the lofty concepts.